Hey there, all you wonderful superhero fans. This is Eugene Brave Rock, Chief Knoppy from Wonder Woman, and you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Hey everyone, welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. As you can tell, not running at 100% this week. The voice is a bit suspect. Not sure how long it's going to hold out, so I'm going to keep the jibber-jabber to a minimum. Plenty of chat coming your way, though. I'm welcoming two guests this week, so more than enough opportunity to hear my voice when it was sounding better when I recorded these interviews. First, from the blockbuster summer superhero movie Wonder Woman, the talented actor who portrays the heroic man of mystery, Chief Knoppy, Eugene Brave Rock. He's going to be stopping by in just a few minutes. Then, later on in the show, your preview of the hottest comic book convention in the Queen City, the Cincinnati Comic Expo. I'm going to be chatting with Matt Bredesteggy from the convention, which runs September 22nd through the 24th. So if you're in the area, you're going to want to be there. We'll get the lowdown from Matt a little later. A lot of great guests are set to appear at the Cincinnati Comic Expo. I'm telling you, as always, there are going to be a lot of great guests there. I've got an incredible guest set to appear on Comic Book Central right now. Check this out, and I'll be right back to chat with Eugene Brave Rock. Eugene was born and raised in Alberta, Canada. His move into showbiz started with acting and then segued into stunt work, ultimately working on the 2015 Leonardo DiCaprio epic, The Revenant. And later that year, Eugene went from stunt work on horseback to acting on horseback when he was cast in Wonder Woman. But we superfans got our first glimpse of Eugene in the DC movie universe in 2016's Batman v Superman: Dawn of Justice. Now, Wonder Woman, played by Gal Gadot in the film, is trying to locate a photo of herself and her team of adventurers relaxing after a battle in World War I. We see Eugene in that picture, but we don't know anything about him or the other characters until this year's film, Wonder Woman. And that's when we found out Eugene is playing Chief Knoppy, a mysterious smuggler who knows how to get people across the front lines. Director Patty Jenkins worked closely with him on the character, and there seems to be much more than meets the eye with Knoppy. Now, even though the film is set in World War I and Wonder Woman is in present day by film's end, I don't think we should be surprised if the Chief turns up in the Wonder Woman sequel. Well, it has been a huge year for my special guest today. This summer, he fought alongside Wonder Woman on the big screen. That blockbuster film is set for release on home video September 19th. Well, he is here in the lair today. A big welcome to Eugene Brave Rock. Eugene, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Good morning.
Well, this movie turned out nicely, didn't it?
Turned out amazing. Wonderful.
I think it made a couple of bucks at the box office. I think you can rest easy.
Oh, yeah.
Now. Well, okay. This was, you know, coming into it too, it's like Wonder Woman's always been such a tricky character. It's, you know, obviously we have Linda Carter. That TV series is beloved, but it seemed like such a struggle getting it to either TV or movie. So this was not a guarantee by any stretch of the imagination. Did you have any, you or anybody that you talked to, have any sort of concerns leading up to the premiere date?
No, I thought it was going to go off great. I mean, everything was, Gal is amazing, Patty's amazing, and you know what? I knew it was going to be huge.
I guess there was that, the appearance in Batman v Superman, I think, because I know for me, and I know for a lot of folks out there, when they saw Gal on screen as Wonder Woman, I think that may have allayed some fears too, because she was probably the best part of the movie.
Yeah.
Had you seen? Because I know you were in Batman v Superman. There's a picture of you in it, so I guess you get credit for that. But had you seen the film prior to this?
Yes, I did. You know what? And in the beginning, when we took this picture, I didn't know that was going to be in Batman versus Superman. That was probably like 2 or 3 months before Batman versus Superman came out in theaters.
Right.
So it must have been one of the last things they put in there.
Okay. So did they? So we'll talk about this a little bit. Yeah. We'll wait to get into what. I'm just so excited to get to Wonder Woman. But you know, we do want to get a little bit of background on you first. So first of all, where are you from originally? Talk about maybe growing up. What kind of kid were you? What kind of influences you had just, you know, as a kid?
I grew up in southern Alberta. on the Blood Tribe. It's a part of the Blackfeet Confederacy. There's several tribes that make up the Blackfeet Confederacy, and we are the biggest one. We're actually the largest reservation in Canada. So I grew up there. My childhood was, it was the good old days, right? It was, I had no worries. I was just living life with my brothers, playing, riding horses, and, you know, doing what kids do.
Well, I never rode a horse, so I pretended to ride a horse. I didn't actually have a horse. So what was life like? Just sort of paint a picture for us and describe maybe just growing up and like what typical summers were for you growing up. You know, obviously horseback riding and things like that. Were you more into athletics? Did you enjoy comic books? Did you know about superheroes? Were you into that at all?
Not really. I mean, of course, Superman and stuff like that. But I mean, the comic books we had were, you know, like probably Archie and like stuff like that. And I don't recall getting any superhero comic books.
Okay.
I remember getting Archie comic books.
Were you into, like, what was school life like? Were you into athletics? Were you into sports? Because I know, I mean, you're obviously, we'll talk about the stunt work, but you're obviously a very physical person growing up.
Yeah, I was into athletics. I played some basketball and some volleyball and did whatever I could get my hands on, yeah.
What was your favorite sport?
I'd say basketball was my favorite sport.
What position did you play?
I'm 6 foot three, so tennis.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
No one's getting near you at that point. Okay, so what was the early interest? Was it acting? Was it stunt work? Was it seeing movies or TV shows and saying, oh, that I like that. I want to do something like that.
You know what? That story is me and my sister watching a movie. I can't recall the movie. It was a Native American on a horse. And I remember at a young age of maybe, I'd say around 10, 11 years old, telling my younger sister, you just watch. Someday you're going to see me on TV riding a horse. She's like, shut up. You know, it's like being a little kid saying, when I grow up, I'm going to have a Lamborghini, right? It's just a dream. And, you know what? So I'm very, very thankful to have those dreams come true.
Well, how do you translate that from being a young kid wanting to do that to actually making it happen? Because as you're growing up, I'm sure, I mean, you said you were watching a movie, a Native American movie, but, you know, I would imagine that's, you're looking at these roles and are you getting input from other people saying, well, it's very limited roles for Native Americans. It's, you know, were people discouraging to you kind of growing up and looking at these different things?
You know what? No, not at all. I mean, It's something that, you know, I actually was discovered walking down the street from a casting director of a Canadian television show, and they were doing a theatrical project. And so she invited me to audition. I had never ever thought that I took the opportunity and I got it. It was, ended up getting into theater. It was my first introduction into acting.
How old were you at this point?
I was 17.
Okay. So you hadn't had, other than just saying, oh, I want to do that, but you hadn't taken any steps. You hadn't been in like school plays or anything like that.
No, you know what? I never had the opportunity to be in school. I lived on the reservation, so we would travel to and from school. So after school, when they were rehearsing for their drama plays and stuff, I was on the bus going home to the res. So it wasn't.
Oh wow! Okay, so you literally just fell. So you really just fell right into this. This just was happenstance.
Yeah.
What was the what were they casting for?
It was actually for a lead role in a play that it was about suicide, the awareness of suicide. And so in this play, I was the lead role where my girlfriend commits suicide. So it was very intense. It was very, you know, I think that was a big learning experience for me acting wise. I mean, it was a 6 month period of rehearsing 5 days a week where I learned, you know, how to stand and how to project my voice.
Oh, wow. So you hadn't had any training coming into this?
No.
Wow. Okay, so you go from no training to just wanting to do this to getting the lead role in something, a subject matter that is so serious. I mean, that is just unbelievable.
Yeah. It ends off with like a 10-minute monologue, which was so tough, where, you know, it's the part of the story where a tear is supposed to come down. And to be honest, I was never able to make that tear come down. I was close once. You know what? But in saying that, you know what? When we did the scene in Trafalgar Square, where we go up to Steve Trevor's portrait, and so that was in a very, you know, I got back to that point where I needed to drop a tear, and I did. So,
oh wow! Full circle.
It was amazing. It was, yeah.
Definitely. Wow. It was cool. But for even a 10-minute monologue for a seasoned pro, that's huge. So for somebody just coming, man, that's, well, they definitely saw something in you. So then you got the acting bug off of that then. You needed to have more.
Yes, I did. The opportunities weren't really there, though.
Right.
I mean, but when they did come, I went to a casting call. They hired me on as an extra. And the first day on set, I was approached by a horse wrangler and a stunt coordinator and asked if I knew how to ride a horse. And if I could fall off a horse. So I was bumped up immediately to a stunt guy.
Okay. That's what I was kind of, yeah. So, you know, 6'3 guy coming in who knows some acting but can ride a horse. I mean, you had all the special resume skills that they needed.
Yeah. No, one thing just led to another. And after that first movie I did, I was introduced to somebody from Buffalo Bill's Wild West show in Paris at the Euro Disney they have in Paris. And I auditioned for that and I got a role there. I stayed a year in Paris where I was trained and we did stages learning how to ride and to fall off horses the best, you know, without getting hurt, and yeah. Choreographed fight scenes and chasing live buffalo.
Wow.
So,
but you hadn't thought of stunt work at all, though. You hadn't thought of being a stunt person at all going into it. You just were thinking straight up acting.
You know what? I just took every opportunity that came my way. And I think that's what's led me to where I'm at now. It's definitely just having that whatever it is to just grab it and say, yeah, let's do this.
That's the William Shatner philosophy. He said that. Never say no. Just take the work when it comes. Oh, that's fantastic. So, okay, so getting into stunt work, because I'm thinking of these things too, because just from your perspective, getting into acting, because you mentioned that the opportunities were limited. I'm even just looking at just like superheroes or, you know, maybe even just action-adventure roles for Native Americans. I mean, obviously, Tonto comes to mind when you think about the history of the Lone Ranger. Were you a Lone Ranger fan? Did you kind of look at that and watch either the old TV show? I know there was the movie in 1981. Had you seen any of that? Did that interest you at all?
You know what? I was a fan of Lone Ranger at the time. You know, now I look back on it and I think upon reflecting, I look at it a little different way. But I mean, growing up, I was a fan of every Native American that was on television.
Yeah, the one that always jumps out at me is Chief Dan George from Outlaw Josie Wales. I loved his character in that.
Amazing, yes.
Yeah, I mean, were those sort of inspirations for you, even just, not necessarily maybe, because, I mean, I think what Clint Eastwood did with that movie was amazing with his portrayal, but I'm guessing there's just a lot of stereotypical roles that you were kind of seeing as you were going through. So what was the kind of balance you were putting in your mind of like, oh, I love seeing these opportunities up there, but boy, a lot of these things are stereotypical.
Well, yeah, like I said, when I was a young kid, I watched them and I was, you know, influenced by them. And, you know, like I said, now I look back and I look at them differently. But, you know, at the same time, I think right now there's a lot more Native Americans telling our own story from our own perspective, and it is changing. I'm very thankful for that, definitely.
Did you see the last Lone Ranger movie? The big budget, you know, one with Johnny Depp?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Yes, do you mind if I ask your perspective on that? I'm just kind of curious, because now this kind of falls into the superhero genre, the comic book, you know, action hero genre. What, I mean, your thoughts on that, because it was certainly a controversial movie, to say the least.
I mean, Johnny Depp is a great actor. I mean, he's done everything, right? He's definitely somebody as an actor I look up to, and you know, it's hard for me to comment.
Yeah,
he's a great actor, but at the same time, I mean, there's so many other native actors that could have done that role. He did a great job.
No, it's interesting to get your perspective on it too, because I'm just looking at it from my perspective. I look at it and say, oh yeah, he's a great producer. I wish he would have just produced the film and you know, hired somebody else for it. Because even, you know, just aside from, you know, heritage, I just thought the character itself came off as goofy. Like it just seemed like an odd, like a lot of odd acting choices. And again, I'm not an actor, but I just kind of looked at this and I'm like, I love The Lone Ranger, but boy, it went in a weird area over here. It's like they're almost like two different movies.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I saw a lot of Jack Sparrow in yeah. Tonto in that one.
It's like mashing up two genres. I just wasn't sure. What do you think they need to do? Like, if I'm giving you the literal reins, if I'm giving you the reins of Scout and as a writer and as an actor, what would you like to see? Because I know in the comic book, The Lone Ranger, I don't know if you had a chance to check out the recent comic book from Dynamite, but I thought they nailed it. I thought the tone was so great in that. What would you like to see in a Lone Ranger film and to see from Tonto? Or hadn't you really thought about it much?
You know what? I haven't really thought about it much, but...
Okay.
I mean, with everything I do now, I mean, a lot of... If I don't know certain things, I'll ask. I'll collaborate with an elder, whether, you know, on certain... Whatever it is, you know, whether it's language issues or dress... wardrobe. I think just collaborating with somebody that actually knows, you know,
just to make sure everything's authentic, just to make sure your performance is authentic.
Yes.
Yeah, no, that's good. You do your homework. That's always good. Look, before we get to Wonder Woman, I want to talk a little bit about the stunt work that you were able to do. You were in The Revenant. How did you get involved in that film? What was your role on that film, and what were the challenges that you faced?
I was introduced to this role prior to production through a stunt coordinator that got a call from another stunt coordinator asking about the Native American stuntmen in Canada. So I've worked with Brent Wolseley on Hell on Wheels and a couple other projects. So he introduced me to Scott Atiyah and Doug Coleman, who are the stunt coordinators for The Revenant. And we just collaborated. I mean... Like I said, there's not very many Native American stuntmen with training, right? So I was at the top of the list. And so along with me, my brother, Tim Brewstead, we were asked to organize a boot camp to see what kind of talent was out there and to help train some boys to do The Revenant. So it was very, very thankful for that opportunity. It was such a great project. It was such a grueling project.
That's what I wanted to ask you. It seems like it would be such a brutal film, a brutal shoot. How long of a shoot?
It was the total shoot. I don't know how long the total shoot was. It must have been, I think it was over a year.
Oh, my.
But I was on set for, I think, about 2.5 months.
Even still, oh, that's an eternity almost.
It was, yeah.
But you were going to say when you watch it, what were you going to say when you said
when you watch it? When you watch, I mean, when I watch it now, I get the shivers because I feel cold. It's, you just get that experience. But being on set and doing it, it was very tough. It was grueling. We were in the elements of the Rocky Mountains of Alberta in November, December, January, and it was, but you know, in saying that, it came out so amazing, so beautiful. I'm so thankful to be a part of that project. It was worth it to freeze and to fall off my horse 40 times. So it was very enjoyable.
You suffer for your
great
art.
Experience.
You suffer for your yeah. art. What were the challenges you faced on that film? Training people, working with maybe some newer stunt folks. What were some of the challenges you faced? Maybe what was the biggest challenge you faced?
You know what the challenges in that one was? Just there were so many stuntmen on set. There were so many there was so many hazards because there was so many people. I mean, we're doing a scene with maybe, I think, 70 stunt guys all at the same time with 30 stunt horses. And the complexity of it, the timing was crucial. The first 6 minutes of Revenant, the fight scene, I mean, I think that took us 6 weeks to film, but it was 6 minutes on camera. But the camera was always moving constantly. So the timing was very crucial. And it's hard to get the timing right. Like I said, when there's 30 horses involved and 70 stunt guys, it was tough.
Are you doing the choreography on the stunts as well, or just straight up stunts?
Just straight up stunts. We would help with a little bit of the choreography. Okay. You know, where to land, where to fall, who's, you know, or else who's doing what, right?
What was Leo like on set?
You know what? He was nothing but business. He was, you know, he earned that Oscar, definitely. I mean, he earned it a long time before that,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, he did.
But, you know, being on set with him, he actually shot me in the one scene where he's sleeping by the tree and he wakes up to the Native Americans rushing him, and he gets up and he shoots. He's sleeping with a loaded gun, and he gets up and he shoots me. So it was...
You were okay with that?
I got to work with him a couple of days, and you know what? You know, you learn a lot from when you're working with people with that magnitude, and you know, just his. He was on duty.
What did you learn from him that you're like, okay, I'm going to take this through every role now?
Just to get in the game, be there, be in the moment, capture it for what it is.
Was he able to turn any of that off in between takes, or did he kind of have to stay in that mindset?
You know what? I didn't see him break the role. He was, like I said, he was very focused.
Wow. Okay.
Every time I seen him, he was very focused.
Yeah. Okay. Stunts, horses, action adventure, heroism, Wonder Woman. Man, this, it just all comes together. How did you get involved in the project? And like you said, we alluded to it earlier. This goes back a few months to Batman v Superman and Zack Snyder, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
That was the first thing that we shot.
Okay. So how did you get involved? Who did you meet with? And just take us through just even that beginning Batman v Superman. And you didn't know it at the time, like you said, but just kind of walk us through. And then it's like, oh, it's a picture? Okay, whatever. Like, what was the early process for you?
The early process for me was, I mean, just going into the audition, I had no idea it was the Wonder Woman.
Was, so your agent calls you and says, hey, I got an audition for you. Show up and here's your sides.
I was actually on hiatus from The Revenant.
Oh, okay.
We had a little bit of a break. So I was actually driving down to California to visit my wife's family. And I got a call from my agent. He knew I was coming to California. I wasn't going to LA, but he knew I was coming to California. And it was an audition that they asked for me.
Nice.
And he said, it's worth your while. He said, they asked for you, so maybe you should go try it out. And then, you know, taking every opportunity I can, I did.
Yeah.
And it was a two-day drive to get to Burbank from where I was. So I was studying my lines. And when I got to Warner Brothers Studios, it was the worst audition I've ever done.
Oh, no.
I couldn't remember my lines. I was so in awe of... You know, it was my first time in LA.
Wow.
So it was very overwhelming.
Okay, walk me through this a little bit, because you're saying you got lines, but okay, so I'm guessing they weren't anything to do with Wonder Woman, Steve Trevor, Chief, anything like that. They're probably just giving you generic stuff, right?
Yes.
Like Bob meets Sharon and they talk about having, you know, a sandwich or something in a restaurant. Something. They're always like generic things, so you don't know what it is, right?
It was actually about a relationship between a father and a son, an estranged father and his son he was trying to connect with.
Wow.
So that's what the script was about.
So you're actually auditioning for Wonder Woman, but you don't know it, right?
No.
Okay.
No, I didn't.
And you don't know anything about the whole Batman v Superman thing and the picture and you don't know anything about that. So you're trying to memorize these lines in this two-day drive. What did you do when you got into the audition? How did...
I was sweating. I was nervous. I apologized. I couldn't remember my lines. And with a little bit of direction from the casting director, Laura Kennedy, she offered to read it right off the script. And, you know, that's unheard of. I was like, wow, really? So she let me read it off the script. And after, I think, two takes, and, you know, as well as her direction, she told me I nailed it. She goes, wow, you nailed it. I didn't take it literally because I've done 100 auditions where they said the same thing and then you never hear from them, right?
You thought they were being kind.
So, yeah.
Okay.
I thought they were just being kind. And you know what? I felt horrible walking out. I, you know, after doing an audition, you know, you did bad. And in your mind, you're like, I should have did this. I should have did that. And you know what? I had to just brush it off.
Yeah.
And be thankful, you know. I was like, you know what, at least I got to come to L.A. I got a tour of Warner Brothers Studios. And it was actually my son's 16th birthday that we got to do all this.
Okay.
So I was just thankful to be able to bring my son there and hang out in L.A. And I took it for what it was, and I left. And a month later, I got a call, and they wanted me to fly to London for a wardrobe fitting and to meet Patty Jenkins.
Wow.
And that's when I was aware that it was Wonder Woman.
Okay. So you hadn't met Zack Snyder at all?
No.
Okay. So this is all going into Wonder Woman world. But, okay, and help us with the timeline, because you're with the cast there. So your cast, just that picture. Because in Batman v Superman, we see the picture of the team, Steve Trevor's team with Wonder Woman. And so you did that first?
That was the first thing we shot, yeah.
Okay, so what...
We actually shot that scene twice.
Right, because you had to shoot the actual scene for Wonder Woman.
Yes.
Okay, so was it basically just when you were doing this, so when you're cast, did they just basically put all of you guys in costume and take a picture and then that was it?
No, we first met, again, after we did the wardrobe. I was there by myself. I did the wardrobe fitting. I didn't get to meet anybody yet. They flew me to London for one day.
Okay.
Wardrobe fitting, met Patty Jenkins, and I flew back to America, and it was a couple months yet that I flew back to London and met everybody, and we sat there and we just collaborated that morning. Me, Chris Pine, Ewan Bremner, Saeed Togamau, and Patty, and Gal.
And then you just took a picture?
I think we got to know each other in the beginning first a little more.
I'm just trying to put that into context of you shooting Wonder Woman. Like, was everybody like, why are we taking a picture? What is it? Like, was there confusion? Or did she go, oh, no, this is going to be a picture in Batman v Superman, and it's going to be this flash forward thing, and then it's going to flash back into this? Like, was the stage set for you?
I wasn't aware of that,
okay.
Right?
Was that confusing to you that you guys are just shooting a picture and then you move on and do something else?
Yes, it was. Everything was like, I mean, I was in awe of everything.
Right.
Because that was my first time in London.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Everything was just, I'm still in awe.
That's great. So you were just like, do whatever you want. Take a picture, shoot some video, grab a donut, whatever you want. I'm just happy to be here.
Exactly.
When you saw Batman v Superman and you saw the picture in it, what did you think? Did you know that was coming up?
Yeah, I did. At that point, a friend of mine saw it before me.
Okay.
He told me about it.
Okay.
And I was like, really? Wow, cool. You know what? Yeah. And I was speechless.
Okay.
I was just watching it last night. I watched it. It was on TV last night. I put through the channels. I seen it. And you know what? Like I said, I'm still in awe.
Okay. We, as fans, we watch this and figure like you guys are all in on it. Like they tell you stuff, especially after you do it. But apparently it's like, oh, you get to be a surprise along with the rest of us. So that's kind of cool. Okay. So your first meeting with Patty Jenkins then, sort of walk us through that. And that initial meeting surprised you too, didn't it?
It did. You know, her first question to me was, what are my conflicts with the stereotypes portrayed in Hollywood? You know, I mentioned, you know, we're not all medicine men, and you know, the whole mysticism thing and a mystical thing, and you know, and she so she told me more about the role. She says, well, your character's name is Chief. Do you have any issues with that? And you know what I do? I did. I mean, those are, growing up, those were fighting words for me, right? It was, so.
And isn't like every Native American character in Hollywood, like throughout history, named Chief?
Yeah.
I mean, like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and it's like, they're all named Chief.
So I didn't, that was one of my objections. I was like, yeah. Do I really have to be called Chief?
That's a good
she
one.
Said, yes. She goes, you know what? That's something we can't change. But she said, you don't ever have to call yourself Chief. She goes, in fact, I'll let you introduce yourself in your own language. How about that? So that was, you know,
wow.
Great respect for Patty for having respect for me and my culture. Definitely for giving me that opportunity to share my culture and my language with the rest of the world.
I think I know why you had to be called Chief, but I also think you can't talk about it, so that won't ask. We'll see where the conversation goes. But when she said to you, you can talk in Blackfoot language, because that's your history, right? I mean, that's your heritage. Like, you're fluent in that Blackfoot language.
Yes. Yeah.
What? Okay, so you're coming on, you're talking to Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. What are you saying to her? Because that, it's not subtitled in the film, right?
No, it's not. I say Oki Nistuni Taniku Napi, which is, hello, my name is Napi. And Napi being, in my culture, he is a demigod. He is he's a storyteller. He's an educator. Those are the stories I listened to when I was growing up. Every story had a lesson in it, right? So it was.
Okay, that's what I want to ask you about, because you made some headlines recently with dropping that little bit of knowledge on us. Okay, so Wonder Woman's a demigod. She's an Amazon.
Daughter of Zeus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's immortal. She's looks the same in World War I as she does in 2017. Apparently you do too. Is that the deal?
I know where you're going with this.
You don't have to wear any like old age makeup or anything. I mean, you can show this yourself. I think you're going to be, there's something going on with Chief, right? There's a little something going on with Chief.
You know what?
Is it fair to say that?
Introduction. Yes. Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, even in that introduction with me and Wonder Woman, I'm the only one that shakes her hand. I'm the only one in our group that knows who she really, I'm the only one that really knows who she is.
Other than Steve Trevor.
Other than Steve Trevor.
Okay.
I mean,
I didn't catch the handshake thing. Okay. So there's definitely
There were several other parts in the show where people greet her. Etta Candy and Samir go to shake her hand, and she doesn't acknowledge it.
Wow. Okay, I never caught that, and I will be catching it on September 19th. I'm going to go through this thing with a fine-tooth comb now and look at this. So there's a connection between your two characters, safe to say?
Definitely, yes.
Okay. Just even being it, so you sort of, that scene where you speak to her and it's the only thing it's not subtitled, you brought that into it? Like, you mentioned to Patty Jenkins what you could say?
Well, that was what she offered to me, was to introduce myself in my own language, and we both collaborated on Napi. We both came to that.
Okay, so you mentioned that to her initially?
Yes.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love the fact that not only are they creating a character, and again, we'll talk a little bit about this, whatever you're allowed to say, but at least for this movie, an original character, and I love the fact that you get to name them. I mean, it's so cool. What other input, other than the language, what other input were you able to bring into the characterization?
I was allowed to embellish my wardrobe with some Blackfoot designs, and, you know, along with collaboration with the costume designer, Lindy Hemming, some of the designs on my belt, different, you know, some of the stuff were even my own personal items, the necklace that I wore, the hat band on my hat was mine, as well as with the armorer, John Baker, he let me, he actually put a studded design on the stock of my gun, which represents a medicine wheel, which is a cultural symbol, a spiritual symbol. It represents the four directions, the four seasons. It represents the four elements, the mental, emotional, physical, spiritual well-being of oneself. It represents all the cultures of the world. It represents the cycle of life.
Had you mentioned that to him?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you kind of collaborated on that with him.
Yes. I was just researching Native Americans early 19th century, and I came across a photo of a Native American with a Winchester underlever like mine, and he had the studded designs on there. So that's where I thought about it, you know, and everything. You look at old pictures of Native Americans, and they're very unique. We didn't dress alike. It wasn't a fashion, right? Everything was unique to oneself, and everything meant something. So for me, to bring that in, that medicine wheel symbol was, you know, it's very unique to me and my people. So I was very grateful for John Baker and Warner Brothers and DC Comics for letting me put that on there.
Wow, that's amazing. I didn't realize the level of collaboration you had there. What was Gal Gadot like on set? I mean, you talk about Leo being all business. I think I've seen enough bloopers from the set to know that I don't think she was as all business as Leo was.
She was amazing. She's so down to earth, you know. She was very fun working with her and Chris Pine.
Does she bring, just being number one on the call sheet, what does she bring to the set?
Everything. I mean, she's just such a wonderful person, you know, inside and out. And it shows. It shines from her, right? So,
Chris Pine, a goofball?
Sometimes, yeah. He's a very funny guy, a comical guy. Very intelligent as well. All of them were amazing. You and Bramner was, you know, they're all so down to earth, so amazing. It was, you know, Saeed was, you know, Saeed's an artist himself. Watching them all work, you know, standing just off camera and watching these actors work, it was like going to school. It was, you know, I learned so much from just being on set and watching them work. Such an amazing experience. Speaking of you and Bremner, I had a couple auditions while I was in London, and I had nobody to read for me. So I asked you and Bremner, you know what? And it was so hard to be trying to, it was tough to act in front of you and doing these auditions. But it was, again, he taught me so much and he gave me so much advice that, you know, it's made me a better actor, a better performer.
Let's talk about the stunt work, because I spoke to Samantha Jo, who was a stunt woman on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but now she's doing acting roles. She's in Wonder Woman. She's in Justice League. And she talked about having a stunt woman for herself. Like, she's not doing the stunt. She had her own stunt woman finally. Did you have a stunt man for you on Wonder Woman?
I did, actually. I did have a stunt man for my.
Are you okay with that?
Some of the stuff I did do on my own. Yeah, I mean, I was okay. You know, at the time, it was like 4 o'clock in the morning, and I had to do this fight scene that was a big wide shot. And we were probably on set 16 hours. So I was fine. Yeah, go ahead. Send my stunt guy in there.
Oh, now you're living the life. Now you know what it's like to be an actor. What did you want? Was there something that you want? Was there a stunt that you wanted to do? You're like, no, I'm taking this one myself. And were you allowed to do that? For insurance purposes?
No, you know what? They're pretty strict on me.
Okay.
Even just riding horses. You know, riding horses comes natural to me, but insurance reasons, they have to have somebody there to grab my horse and just to make sure everything was okay.
Whole different thing as an actor. Talk about practical effects versus computer generated. When we're looking at Wonder Woman, because a lot of stuff today is just CGI. We see CGI stuff all the time. Wonder Woman has just a very different look about it, because it really looks like people are throwing down and getting down and dirty on a lot of stuff.
They were. I mean, yeah. I mean, we did, all of us as actors on one scene, I remember we had to do a fall, and we did it maybe 20, 30 times. And I actually never even didn't make the cut. I was like, hey, where's that scene? I hurt my knees on that. I got hurt falling 30 times. We didn't even see it on screen.
Was this during the scene where they were freeing the occupied village?
Actually, it was when we blew up Dr. Maru's lab.
Oh, okay.
We're all running out of the lab as it blows up.
Oh, so you get to like one of those like running in the foreground and the fireball behind you kind of scenes?
Yeah.
And you didn't, and it did. It hit the cutting room floor?
No.
Maybe we'll see it on the Blu-ray when it comes out too. Talk about that, shooting that scene of the occupied town. Just going in, because that's, to me, is where the film kind of went next level. When, you know, she crosses no man's land and then the following scene, that. How difficult and how challenging was it to shoot all that?
We would always go through before we would do something. We'd watch television and we'd watch them go through the whole process before we even did it. We had our stunt doubles and doubles do this all before we did it.
So oh, wow. A little bit easier than The Revenant?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now, I know Samantha Jo, she's in Justice League. You're not in Justice League, right? Can we say you aren't in that movie?
No.
Okay, so you're not in that. But if I'm sure there's going to be a Wonder Woman sequel. I mean, the thing made a bajillion dollars, so I'm sure there's going to be a Wonder Woman sequel. It takes place now. You would be interested in being in a sequel, wouldn't you?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
For sure.
If they do have a sequel, and if you are in the sequel, could we call you John?
Call me John?
Is that possible? As in John Standing Bear?
No comment.
You can't blame a guy for trying, can you? I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't ask. I know the Warner Brothers lawyers would descend upon you. Look, we know Geoff Johns is writing the sequel. We know Geoff Johns created Super Chief, John Standing Bear. So just on behalf of the listeners, if Geoff Johns has something in mind and puts you into it, we would love to see that. I'm just saying.
Yes, a lot of people would. You know, I've got so much attention from the Native American community. You know, that they love it. So
let me ask you a safe question. Have you been frequenting comic book stores?
Yes, I have.
Awesome. Have you had lunch with Geoff Johns?
Not yet.
Yeah, because I think that's, I mean, we see some of these characters coming in. Is it safe to say in the film Wonder Woman, in the current film now, that Chief Knoppy does not have superpowers, or at least wasn't using them? Is that safe to say that in this film that's already out?
I will leave that up to the fans to decipher.
Okay. Because he's got the gun, he's running around, he's, you know, he's doing some heavy lifting, but he's not, he's got great aim. I mean, we know that. He's got super aim. Okay. Yeah, it's just interesting kind of go through these things, because I know there's like Apache Chief. You know, I grew up in the 70s. I always watched the Super Friends. And there's like Apache Chief, and there's like homages to him. So, you know, he grows like 50 feet tall and different things like that. So I just didn't know if they, you know, if that's somewhere where we're headed. So would you like to have superpowers if I gave you a choice?
Well, of course. Who wouldn't want to have superpowers?
What superpower would you give yourself? In a movie, if you could have any superpower at all.
Oh, that's so tough. Wow. I don't know. You know what? To fly? I mean,
Flight would be cool. You get to places quicker. You don't have to take Uber or Subway or.
Yeah, I'll keep it safe and say, yeah, fly.
Flying is pretty cool too. Just speaking from, you know, from the Native American perspective, what is it having a character like this? And obviously look, I know you can't talk about it. We're joking around. We're goofing around here. And I know you can't talk about anything right now. But how important is it to have a character like this in one of, I don't know how this is all going to shake out, but it could be the biggest movie of the year. And such a high presence, and knowing that there is potential for this character to do so much more. And they're obviously planting some seeds. We know that. How important is this for the Native American community to have just a character like this that can, just huge. Get in and save the day for one with Wonder Woman?
Exactly. It's so huge. We are not, you know, it's Native American, being portrayed in a positive light as a hero figure, and that doesn't happen too often. So it's amazing to get this opportunity and be a part of DC Comics and Warner Brothers and to bring some hope and to inspire Native Americans across Native America.
What feedback are you getting from your friends, your family, your community about this role?
You know what I'm getting? The feedback I'm getting is, you know, people tearing up when they see me on screen and speak Blackfoot, and it's an emotional thing. It's more than one person has told me that they cried when they saw me portrayed as Chief Nappy on, you know, in my introduction. You know, elders have been coming to me. You know what? I even was gifted a headdress, which is doesn't happen very often, you know, in my culture. It's the biggest honor that you can get.
Wow.
And going home, I was bestowed with a headdress, which is amazing. So the feedback and the feedback has been great. It's such a wonderful opportunity to portray a Native American in a positive light and be that hero figure.
That little kid that was watching that movie all those years ago with his sister that said, "I want to do that. I'm going to do that one of these days." What would he say if he saw Wonder Woman?
Woohoo! Yes! Right on. About time.
Oh, man. Yes, he would. Well, we all said that when we watched that movie. We all said that. Latest projects. What you got coming up? I know you're hanging out in the vineyard right now. We talked about that. You're making some wine there?
Yeah. I'm walking through the vineyards right now.
Nice.
Yeah.
How's the wine? How's the project? You got good wine?
You know what? I'm not a wine drinker. I'm actually allergic to the sulfate. So
no. Well, we'll drink. You can send me some. You can send me a case. I'll tell you how it is.
So the next project that I have coming out is with Liam Neeson. It is called Hard Powder.
Funny Liam Neeson or serious disturbed Liam Neeson?
I don't know about disturbed, but pretty serious.
Okay. He gets intense. We'll say intense Liam Neeson.
Yeah, very, very tough. You know, working with as many people as I have, like I didn't realize Liam Neeson was that tall. He's taller than me.
Oh, wow. So, okay.
So such a great guy.
Gives you somebody to look up to. Look, about this project, we know about that. I'm sure you're going to be in a Wonder Woman sequel. We'll look at that. When it happens, if it happens, we can find out about it. I'm guessing on social media. You're out there on Facebook?
Yes, I have a fan page on Facebook, and as well as Instagram and Twitter.
And Twitter, you're Gene Braverock?
Gene Braverock, yes.
And then Facebook, it's Eugene Braverock, correct?
Yes.
Man, that's fantastic. We're going to follow you over there. Eugene, continued success. Look, I know you can't talk about it, but we are so looking forward to you in the sequel. I mean, we are really stoked about this character. I know there's a lot of backstory. It's going to be fun to watch the arc and to see you in the world of Wonder Woman. So continued success, and thank you so much for joining me on Comic Book Central today.
Thank you. Great talking to you.
I don't know. What do you folks think? John Standing Bear? Third version of Super Chief from 52 writer and Wonder Woman 2 writer Geoff Johns? Maybe it is. Apache Chief from Super Friends? I don't know. Maybe it's a combination of multiple characters. I loved Apache Chief from Super Friends. Who knows? But I'm sure we'll find out when Wonder Woman 2 hits theaters December 13th, 2019. Now, the current Wonder Woman film, it's available now for digital download September 19th on Blu-ray and DVD. Big thanks to Eugene Braverock for dropping by today. I'll put the links to his social media pages in the show notes for this episode at my website, comicbookcentral.net. All right, kids, time to get the lowdown on the big show downtown. Downtown Cincinnati, that is. It's the Cincinnati Comic Expo. Guests aplenty are headed to Ohio September 22nd through the 24th. Let's learn more about this crazy cool comic book convention.
Well, very soon, comic book creators and pop culture icons will be arriving in the heart of the Queen City, Cincinnati, Ohio, for the Cincinnati Comic Expo. Joining me now with a preview of this crazy cool comic book convention is the administrator of the Cincinnati Comic Expo, Matt Bratesteggi. Matt, welcome back to Comic Book Central.
Oh, thanks for having me, Joe. Pleasure to be here.
I always love having you on. Looking forward to the show. This is, let me see if I get this right. This will be the 8th convention, the 8th actual Cincinnati Comic Expo.
Yes.
Okay, so started in 2010. So, you know, not that long ago, but man, each year, bigger and better. It's, I mean, can you compare 2010's show to what's coming up for 2017? Just in size and scope. Can you go back through the mists of time and give us a little preview for flashback for us?
I mean, bigger and better is always, it has been our mantra. I mean, ever since 2010, when we first started, it was going to be, okay, next year is going to be bigger and better, you know, and that's always been Andrew Satterfield and I's mantra as to, okay, what can we do, you know, next year that will continue to bring people back and then their friends. You know, and that's the only way to do it is by getting bigger and better. You know, that's one of those things that we always try to look forward to. And I mean, that's our biggest, you know, I hate to say task on what we have to do each year. Going back to 2010, oh my God. I mean, we were a single day show. We were in the concourse of the Cintas Center there at Xavier University, which is their basketball arena. And I mean, we had 70 total vendors and artists there. And it was, you know, God, you know, it seems like forever ago, doesn't it? It is. And then, you know, here we are now with a 3 day with, you know, 300 plus exhibitors and artists over, you know, down at the main floor of the Duke Energy Convention Center in Cincinnati. So it's, I mean, 8 years ago, if you would have said this is where you're going to be, we probably wouldn't have believed it. It right. would have been, you know, let's just see what it is. But at the time, it was Cincinnati didn't have a convention. We didn't know what the support was going to be. We know with pop culture, the fans go in and out. And so it was, you know, it's a hit or miss as to what you're going to get to have people that are going to be there. So it was... you know, it was, let's try for 2011. If that continues to grow, we'll go for 2012 and so on.
Yeah. And just the guests keep coming, the vendors keep coming, the comic book creators, and then all the fans keep coming in attendance up till last year, man. Stan Lee last year, that was, your brain still has to be swimming after that one. You probably still can't believe it happened.
I mean, I hate to say, I mean, it was an honor to have Stan there, and it was great. We're so happy that Stan had a good time. But I mean, not to say that's where it was one of those things where it was, okay, we just had Stan Lee.
Yeah.
How do we try to make it better for next year? And that is such a hurdle to overcome and an obstacle to overcome. I mean, to most, it's not possible.
Right.
And all we can do is just try to come up with the best guest list, the best layout, the best events that, you know, can happen, and have the people come out and support us.
I think that's the thing is the quality. I mean, Stan was my first guest on Comic Book Central, and I thought, well, where do you go from here? It's like, okay, I'm done. Goodbye. First episode, I'm out. But I think you hit the nail on the head. It's just like you just keep trying. Just keep trying to give fans what they want. Just more stuff, more quality. Just bring those guests in. Because there's such the world is now open to these things. I mean, it's not just pop culture. I mean, like, you turn on the television set, you go to the movie theaters, everything's comic book based. I mean, everything's comic book based. So pretty much everybody is involved on some level. I think that's, as you go, it's like, okay, which ones are popular? Which ones do people want to see? Which ones are retro? Which ones are going to get that nostalgia feeling? I think you guys have, you've pretty much hit all these targets. Let's talk about some of these. Let's talk about comic creators first. You mentioned about, it's a comic book convention. I just got back from Trificon in Connecticut. That's what I love about that is that they always have the comic book creators. They never lose sight of, you know, where did these things come from? Where, you know, who are the creators of some of these? Let's talk comic book creators first. Some of the folks that are going to be coming to the Cincinnati Comic Expo this year.
Our big ones are definitely going to be Greg Capullo and Scott Schneider, who are currently doing the Dark Knight Metal series with DC. And even before then, I mean, Scott and Greg have wide recognition and been well known for their works with DC, Batman, that kind of stuff. So with them, now coming and with them currently having something hitting the stands, hitting the comic book store shelves, that'll be something really exciting for the fans.
It's huge. It's huge. I'm telling you, I just got back from Connecticut. They were there in Connecticut for the weekend. I'll be honest. I didn't get to see them because I was running around doing stuff. I was doing panels. I was recording stuff for Comic Book Central. I was trying to buy stuff for myself. Those lines were so big. It's the fan base for these guys is incredible. And they're just signing stuff all the time. And the product is all there and all the Batman stuff and everything they worked on. I mean, they were rock stars at this thing. So it's, you got two rock star comic book creators coming right off the bat. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, so we're very excited to have them. And then we also have Adam Hughes coming in. So we're very excited to have somebody with Adam's talents coming in to join us.
Yeah, because Wonder Woman's huge this year. Yeah. So obviously he's done a lot of work with Wonder Woman, Catwoman, a lot of these different different cover artists. So that's going to be very cool to get some stuff signed there.
Yeah. And then also, sticking with the DC theme, we have Jay Lee coming in. Who's done a lot of Superman and Batman work as well.
Yeah.
So we're very happy to have him joining us.
Let's talk about some of the media guests, the pop culture, the comic book, movie, and TV folks. Like I said, how do you top Stan Lee? You don't top Stan Lee, but man, you get folks coming in, I think from one of the most beloved films of all time, certainly one of the most quoted movies of all time, Princess Bride.
Yes. Yeah, we're very excited to have Carrie and Wallace joining us this year.
Yeah, Carrie Ellis and Wallace Shawn are going to be there. Inconceivable. I don't know how many times he's going to hear that line over and over.
Yeah. How many times he's going to hear it or how many times he's going to be asked to say it. That'll be one of those things as to, we'll have to see what Vegas has on the over and under.
I'm sure he's okay with it by now. Look, after, all these years, I think you have to. And then, those folks are going to be there. But you talk about Wallace Shawn. You can't talk about Wallace Shawn without talking about Toy Story. So that's going to tie in with one of my favorite actors of all time. John Ratzenberger is going to be there. Toy Story, pretty much every Pixar film, I think, pretty close.
That is one of John's credits.
Yeah.
John has appeared in some role or capacity. He has appeared in every Pixar film.
Yeah, I think they even made a joke within one of the films that he did all those voices. But even going back to the 80s, Empire Strikes Back, he popped up in all these films that we loved because you're like, oh, that's Cliff Clavin from Cheer. He pops up in those. It's like Empire Strikes Back, Superman 1 and 2. When the missiles are being launched, he's the guy at the helm there in Superman 1. And I think, when they're getting feedback from the astronauts in Superman 2, he's there talking there. So, he's in a lot of these crazy cool comic book films that we love.
Right. And he also has that classic feel for being on Cheers, that there are, even though Cheers has nothing to do with comic books, there's still that fan base for it. There's still those people that turn out for it.
Yeah.
And that's one of those things that we in Cincinnati, we see with our fans is there is that nostalgic crowd. A couple of years ago when Henry Winkler came to the show,
yeah.
I mean, there were Henry has no comic book, theme connection as well, but people wanted to come out and see the Fawn.
Yeah, so, he was Ambush Bug. I will give him. He did one voice of it. I did get to chat with him for about 2 minutes about Ambush Bug. But yeah, you're correct. Yeah. He is the Fawns.
Yeah.
And speaking of Star Wars, we've got Return of the Jedi's represented, Caroline Blekiston. And this is, what did I see online? This is her final U.S. signing?
This is going to be her final U.S. appearance.
Okay.
She's primarily based in the U.K.
Right.
and attends some European shows, but she, through her representative, has told us that the travel to the United States and North America is
it gets a little tricky. Yeah, it gets a little tricky.
Yeah,
sometimes.
It does.
Yeah.
So
I think David Prowse has mentioned that too. It gets a little tricky for him. So I think he's kind of put
the
brakes on that.
Shortly after our show last year, David announced that under doctor's orders, he can't travel internationally anymore. So.
Yeah, so.
We were quite honored that the Cincinnati Comic Expo was his last U.S. signing.
Yeah.
At some point, people got to you know, take care of themselves.
They retire. You know. I mean, that's, you know, they want to retire and live the good life. And
you can't travel forever.
They've earned it. Yeah, they've earned it. So, yeah, so for folks here in the States who want to get a chance to meet some of these folks from the Star Wars universe, speaking of Star Wars universe, and again, I do segments for an Indiana Jones podcast, so this one is huge for me. Julian Glover, he's going to be coming in. So not only do you get Empire Strikes Back, not only do you get Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, I'm hoping to we haven't had him on the IndieCast yet, so look, you and I are going to have to work something out here. We got to get a conversation with Julian Glover here for the IndieCast too. But you also get James Bond for Your Eyes Only. He was in Harry Potter movies. So yeah, talk a little bit about Julian Glover coming in.
And Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones. Oh, wow.
That's another one of those huge.
I think I may have heard about that show. Yeah. Right. I think I heard.
Yeah. But yeah, no, Julian, and Julian's somebody we've tried to pursue for a couple of years, and it's always either been a scheduling thing or something else going on. So we're quite honored that we finally have a chance this year to bring him in. And as you alluded to, he's somebody that is. In so many different genres and so many different franchises where he's one of those that has a broad appeal that somebody will recognize him from something.
Yeah.
You know, either you recognize him from something in Star Wars or you recognize him from his voice from Harry Potter or something. So he's somebody that, you know, you could go to a group of people and you could, you know, describe who he is and somebody will know something that he's been in. And so that's where those guests with broad appeal really help a show like ours.
Well, in Last Crusade, he chose poorly, but I think in bringing him to the Cincinnati Comic Expo, you chose wisely. So we're looking forward to meeting Julian Glover. Gotham, you talk about, you know, there's some retro stuff, there's some nostalgia for us, but right up to today, Gotham is represented. Who do you got coming in from Gotham?
We have Maggie Gia coming in from Gotham, who plays the role of Ivy Pepper on the show Gotham, who, as most fans know, eventually becomes Poison Ivy.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. They're going to be firing up the next season here very soon. Season 3 was just released on DVD and Blu-ray. So for folks who aren't familiar with her on Gotham, they can get that binge watch and catch up before the show. And Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. I had a chance to meet and moderate a panel with Steve Englehart in Connecticut. He not only created Star-Lord, so we talked about Guardians of the Galaxy, he and Sean Gunn were on the panel, but he also created Mantis, the character of Mantis, now brought to life for us and by your special guest. Talk a little bit about that one.
Yeah, so we have Palm Clementif. She will be coming in. This is she hasn't made many convention appearances yet, especially since the film came out. So we're quite honored to be one of the first few shows that has her attend a convention. But Palm, before Guardians of the Galaxy, is internationally known as an actress with her works previously over in Southeast Asia and independent films. And then she reached the international spotlight with her role as Mantis. So through some searching and talking to people, we located Palm, and Palm is able to come in and take a break from shooting for Avengers 4 or
Infinity War.
Infinity War. Yeah.
So she'll spill all the secrets, right? She'll spill every secret for Infinity War at Cincinnati Comic Expo. So if you want to learn all the spoilers for it, just come there. I'm sure she'll tell us everything.
Yeah.
There won't be those non-disclosures. Forget about them, right?
That's going to be fun. We're quite excited to have her as well.
And you can't talk about comic books without talking about a comic book shop owner. You got probably one of the most prominent ones from The Big Bang Theory, Kevin Sussman. He's going to be hanging out. I wonder if you think he's going to be buying comic books while he's there?
Stuart! I don't know about you. Hey, if Stuart wants to buy anything, Stuart can go ahead and look around. You know, who knows what he needs in his shop there for, you know, for the guys out there on The Big Bang.
That'd be cool if he actually bought something there and then, like maybe like something that says Cincinnati Comic Expo, and then maybe it just shows up on the set. You got to get him something there that he can just sort of like sneak in the background there.
Love to try to do something on that, but yeah, that'd be fantastic. We're quite excited to have Kevin join us, and then, but Kevin's also known for his work on Wet Hot American Summer and the the follow-ups on that. And then, but yeah, he's probably his biggest role is Stewart on Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, the biggest show on television.
Will be on CBS this fall.
Biggest show on television. Yeah, it doesn't get any bigger than that. And of course, the Karate Kid is going to be showing up there. Ralph Macchio. You going to do? Yeah. You gonna have him do a karate demo? That'd be cool.
If Ralph wants to do a karate demo, Ralph can do a karate demo. I know he will be in between shoots for his the revival of Cobra Kai, which will be coming out on Netflix.
Nice.
So we're quite honored to be able to have him to get him in between the scheduling on that. We'll be excited to have him come in and be able to tell us about the past of the Karate Kid and what's going to be coming with his new series.
Fun stuff. A lot of cool guests. Stuff for kids. What do we got looking at? I mean, this is really fun for the whole family. So what do we got going on? All kinds of crazy cool things and costumes and all kinds of stuff, right?
Yeah. Well, we have the return of the Kid Zone again, which is now become a fixture at the Cincinnati Comic Expo. We're getting a lot of recognition for that. A lot of people are recognizing that you know, we're trying, you know, we're being one of those conventions that's different. We're incorporating the kids. We're incorporating the whole family. So, of course, we have our Kid Zone area, which we do bring in carnival-style games and activities for kids to do, either button-making machines or shooting the shields at the Red Skull or, you know, that kind of stuff where, they get to be little Steve Rogers. And then, we pride ourselves on that section to incorporate fans of all ages.
Bringing those comic books to life, right?
Yeah. Bringing the comic books to life or the TV shows or the movies that they see to hopefully that they can then build that connection as well that, the movie that they saw with their uncle or, you know, the TV show they watched on Disney or something like that,
yeah.
You know, originated from a book or something like that. And then they can learn more about their character.
Discount tickets for kids, right?
Kids 7 and under are free all the days. And then we have our youth passes, which are the kids is 8 to 12. And it's $5 just for a single day or $10 for a weekend, which is all 3 days.
You can't beat that, man. I mean, you can't beat that. It's, you know, take the kids and you're not going to go broke. You know, like we know going to comic conventions and buying the stuff and getting the autographs, we know that that can add up. So it's nice to get a little ease on that crunch on the front end. So.
Yeah, we want to try to make it, we want to make it fun for the whole family, but at the same time, we don't want to bankrupt people.
Have them take a second mortgage out on the house. Poor dad. Give dad a break, man.
And then we want them to, as show promoters, and we also want them to go around to our various vendors and artists and, pick up a souvenir or two or something like that from any of our expected exhibitors to
buy their merch.
Take home as well.
Buy their merch, man. That's why they're there. They're there to get us the cool merch. Let's see. Cosplayers are going to be there. Costume contest, correct?
Yes. Our annual costume contest, as always, gets bigger and better every year as well. With our rules and policies, a lot of people, look up to our costume contest as to, being unique and different.
Look up for the rules because I know things are changing as we move through comic conventions. Some of the weapons and some of the things are getting pretty realistic. So they're all laid out on the website,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a different world. Yeah, it ain't 2010 anymore, man. We're in a whole different world. But all those rules and everything, they're on the website, right? So people can check that out and see what they can bring and what they can't.
Yeah, people, everything, things are always changing, but for most up-to-date stuff, people can always check out our website, www.cincinnaticomicexpo.com. That's where we'll have, the show floor, that's where we'll have the panel schedules, but that's where we'll have, tips and helpful kind of stuff. People can always check out our social media pages as well, where we'll have, any last-minute changes or adjustments or that kind of stuff.
Check it out and make sure everybody knows what's expected. Give the security guards a break. Give the volunteers a break. Everybody's working hard. So it's always good to be prepared and, no surprise when we get there. But everyone will just have fun. Hey, it is always fun. I love taking Comic Book Central on the road to Cincinnati Comic Expo. I love having one of these things in my backyard. It's pretty cool. Always a pleasure, Matt. I appreciate you joining me. Get back to work. I know you've got flights to schedule and hotel rooms to book.
Yeah, lots to do.
You guys are running Six Ways to Sunday. I'm looking forward to being there. Thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
No problem. Thank you, Joe.
CincinnatiComicExpo.com. That's where you go to learn more and to get your tickets. Man, I'm telling you what, you're going to want to get them. It is an amazing show every year. Thanks again to Matt for stopping by the Lair. All right. I got to save my voice for next week. I'm going to be at the convention. I'm going to be trying to record some interviews. I got to save this voice. So I'm going to wrap things up for today. Don't forget to share the Lair, folks. Share this episode on social media right now with all your friends. Subscribe to the show on iTunes if you haven't already. And get yourself back here soon, because next week on Comic Book Central, yeah, we just talked about them. And if you can't make it to the Cincinnati Comic Expo, you can check out one of their special guests right here on Comic Book Central, from The Empire Strikes Back, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, For Your Eyes Only, Game of Thrones, a bunch of stuff, 6 decades of legendary performances, the great Julian Glover. He's going to be here. Make sure you're here as well. Until then, enjoy any convention you might be attending. Keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the Lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central, is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations, 3.0 imported license. All the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Wonder Woman, she's in trouble.
In a cook!
Calling out the Apache word for big man, Apache Chief instantly becomes a 50-foot